All right, so just a quick little review. Paul's third missionary trip went across Asia, got over to Troas, got called over to Philippi, beaten in Philippi, put in prison, set free, then went down to Thessalonica and then Berea, and got ran out of those places, went down to Athens, then called for Timothy and Silas to come down to join him, went over to Corinth, spent quite a bit of time there in Corinth. He was on his way back to Israel, and some of his enemies knew that he was getting on the ship, and they said, let's get him. And so he went across, decided to go back up through Macedonia, and then came back down to Troas and got shipped in to come down here to avoid those who were after his life. And he ended up back in Tyre, and then down to Ptolemais and Caesarea, and then down to Jerusalem. Okay, so that's his third journey that we looked at last week. Now we're going to pick up from there. And after he came down to Caesarea and Jerusalem, this is when he spent, got down to Jerusalem. There's a big, I guess you'd call it somewhat of a riot there in Jerusalem. And the Jews were trying to kill him. And the soldiers came out and rescued him and protected him from that. And he ended up in prison. And they were going to beat him, and he says, is it right to beat a Roman citizen? And then they got scared because they had already put him in chains and all that. All that took place in Jerusalem. Then he went over to Caesarea, spent 2 years in Caesarea there waiting for some kind of decision, and it's there where he appealed to Caesar. And so we find in chapter 25, in verse number 11, that Paul then is forced to appeal to Caesar to be able to get away from the Jews. In verse 11 of 25 of Acts, he says, "For if I be an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar." So he appealed to Caesar, the emperor of Rome, and sought to save his life in that way. So that begins the whole procedure that's taking place here. He was started out there at Caesarea, and then after he took off from Caesarea, they touched down in Zidon. And chapter 27, verse number 1 to 3. Chapter 27, and when it was determined, now this is, they're starting out on their ship trip. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. And entering into a ship of Adriatium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia. One Aristarchus of a Macedonian of Thessalonica being with us. All right, so that's interesting that Aristarchus was with them during this time. And evidently, Luke probably was too, since Luke was writing this, and it's in a first-hand information here that Luke is giving to us. So they've started the trip off, and they touched down in Zidon. We see here in verse number 3, and the next day we touched at Zidon. And Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go into his friends to refresh himself. All right, so he didn't have to do that, but they knew that Paul was not guilty. And so they were kind to him and sent him on that way to be able to spend some time with his friends. All right, then they sailed under Cyprus. And it's interesting, the term that is used here in verse number 4, look at it, it says that we launched from thence and we sailed under Cyprus. All right, so I thought, under Cyprus, what does that mean? It looks like they went over Cyprus instead of just under Cyprus. Well, the word under means leeward or under shelter of the island, away from the wind.
The wind was blowing from the west.
Okay, so if the wind was blowing, they were hiding from the wind, and so they were under it, under the protection, in a sense. So when it says they were under Cyprus, they were under the protection of it because of the winds.
Can I just ask something?
Yes, ma'am.
I remember reading, it's quite a while ago, so I might be wrong. Leeward can also mean port in very ancient times.
You mean what?
Port. studded port. It used to be starboard, leeward. Which were reading?
I'm not a sailor, so I don't know. But anyway, when I looked it up, that's what it meant. You know, that was the main definition of it, that it meant to be under the shelter of an island, leeward, or away from the wind. So maybe there's other definitions of it as well.
If they were sailing in that direction, it would have been leeward of the ship.
But they could have come this side of Cyprus. It
would have been leeward side of the ship.
That's possible too.
So it's more about where the ship is and whatever is in relation to.
Okay, that is a possibility.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I'm not real good at navigating type terms. So.
Headed to the right, it would have been to the starboard anyway.
All right. Well, you sailors could sort that out later. Let's keep going here. Then they changed ships in Myra, in verse number 5, and when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. And there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us thereon. All right, so Alexandria, down here. All right, so he found a ship that was a ship of Alexandria that was up here, that it was headed for Italy. And so they got on board that ship headed for Italy. That was an Alexandrian ship. Okay, so they're heading off that direction. And then they continue across, verse number 7, and when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarcely were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete over against Salamis. All right, so they sailed over there, arrived at Cnidus, and then they worked their way down to Crete, and they were on the southern side of Crete, working their way down there. And they sailed under Crete. We just saw there in verse number 7. Again, it's that same word as leeward. So this time, they're on the opposite side of it. I don't know. So if the word really means under the cover of the from the wind, then that would make sense. Otherwise, I don't know the answer, because they had to be on the bottom side of Crete this time, because they had to get over there to Fair Havens. So they couldn't be on the top side. Yes, sir?
All of these sort of lines that go across to represent where they travel, you know. I guess on the land, it's a bit more definite. But on the sea, I mean, they're taking some creative license with drawing the lines.
Well, I drew the lines.
You drew the lines, okay. I was just wondering, are you kind of just basing it off kind of like
GPS,
flow data statistics?
Well, I know where they've landed. And so, and plus, I used other maps that other people had done in the past.
Yeah, I just meant like more just kind of like generally what the winds would allow people to do, like in those days.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is, I have several different maps, and I was looking at them, and I was creating my own map so I could put my own things on it.
The red lines, very creative.
Well, I did that because of the storm. All right, so that's why I did that. All right, so we'll get to there in a second. Okay, and then. With difficulty, they reached Fair Havens, verse number 8. All right, and hardly passing it, came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lassa. All right, so they had difficulty getting to that area, but they made their way down there. And this is a picture of Fair Havens. All right, obviously up on the hill, looking down to the south.
But this is very much like. Well, Western Australia a little bit,
doesn't it? Yep. So, looking down there, they would have been coming around that way, and they came into here, but they said that wasn't commodious for winter, and you can kind of see why. It's not really a cove. It's just kind of a bend in the coastal area there a bit. And then they traveled up this way again until they got to where they were planning to go. They're heading up further that direction. Okay, so that gives you a little bit of an idea of the area. Then Paul warned them of danger in verses 9 to 12. And now, when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because of the fast was now already passed, Paul admonished them and said unto them, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be hurt and much damage, not only of the lading of the ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master of the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken of Paul. All right, now, let me read 12 as well. And because of the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenicia, and their winter, which is in the haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest, southwest and northwest. All right, now, I don't have an answer for this, and neither do you, but it's something worth pondering. Did Paul know these kind of things just from a gut feeling, or was it based on all of his multiple travels, or was it based on something God was revealing to him? I don't know.
How could something be in the southwest and the northwest at the same time, too? I don't really understand.
Well, I think he was also an experienced sailor.
Well, he was. And so I don't know, but I don't know the answer to your question. That's a tough one. How could it be southwest and northwest at the same time? I don't know. But maybe it's just the way they translated it. I don't know.
Maybe they didn't understand, like, as far as a world map, you know, longitude, latitude, north.
I don't know. I did not look into that in detail, so I can't answer any more than on that. Your guess is as good as mine. But the thing that caught my attention was, you know, was Paul just sharing something that was kind of a gut feeling, or was it sharing something that he learned from experience, which he had a lot of experience, like Lepe's points out here. But also, it could be the Lord laid it on his heart, because later on he says, I told you guys, you know, so it could be that the Lord actually had pricked his heart and said, you know, you guys shouldn't be going. I don't know the answer to that, but nonetheless, he warns them, tells them we're going to be in danger. This isn't a good idea to keep going. And then they start their...
Could I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Verse 9, what's the fast was now already passed? What does that even mean?
Day of Atonement.
Thank you.
So what's it got to do with sailing?
Well, it was probably had something to do with the wet seasons of the weather. And
okay,
you know,
the time of year.
Yeah, it was probably more the time of year, and it was just a marker of the time of year that.
In case, it sounds like Paul knew about the seasons, or like the wind's going to start ripping soon because that's the time of year it is.
It sounds like that. And he's been out there a lot. You know, I mean, all the trips that he's had back and forth. And, you know, so he'd done a lot of sailing. So
My theory is, and I think it's likely, is that Paul, boy, we know that he didn't have a lot of money. I mean, like, not all the time. Like, some support him, but he was often under hard times. So
yep.
What a lot of people did at the time was likely is the way you paid for your fare is that you were a deckhand. You helped on board the ships. It's very likely that's what he actually did.
Maybe.
So the way I said, he probably had a lot of first-hand experience with
the sea side of it. Yeah. That's a very possibility. Okay. And then verse number 8 there, that the why should it be? Oh, I'm in the wrong chapter here. 27:8. Okay. So they passed over there. They're traveling along. So they start out their trip here, and then as they travel through there, there's this long storm. Okay, verse number 23, so we move a long way down the chapter, the good section of the chapter. I'm not going to read it all here, but we move on down to verse number 23. For there stood by me, well, let me read 22. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of God, in whose I am and whom I serve, saying, Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer. I believe God, that it shall be even as it was told me. Howbeit, we must be cast upon a certain island. But when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, About midnight, the shipmen deemed that they drew near some country. All right, so they sounded. Well, years ago, I mean, again, to show my ignorance of sea things, maybe some of you that have been out on the water a lot, you'd understand this. But in verse 28, it says they sounded, and it was 20 fathoms, and then they sounded again, and then found that it was 15 fathoms. In my mind, I'm thinking, I don't get what's going on here. But I understand now they were measuring the depth and it was getting shallower. And that means because it was getting shallower, we're getting close to something.
Yeah, they'd have like a rock or a lead weight or something on a rope. And they would, and that gave you the length because they didn't have sonar yet. So that's the determined length.
So then as you think on this, the storm had been blasting them around for 2 weeks, 14 days. And they hadn't eaten. And, you know, can you imagine how weak and wobbly you'd be after 2 weeks of not eating and bouncing around in a massive storm? It would have been a rough, rough, rough time. Very little sleep because of the wild storm. And, you know, they were having a very difficult time. But now Paul gets this vision, said we're going to land on an island. We're all going to be safe, but the ship's going to be wrecked. Well, that wasn't very good news for the ship, but at least they were going to be safe. According to this. And so then verse number 29, then fearing lest we should have fallen upon the rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. And the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship when they had let down the boat into the sea under the color that, as though it were would have cast anchors into out of the foreship. Paul said unto the centurion and to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, we cannot be saved. And the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. Obviously, that probably made those guys real happy, you know, but the soldiers were in charge of the ship here, and they just chopped the ropes off and let her fall. And so they spend the night there in the ship, and it all blows to pieces. But Paul encourages them to take something to eat. Verse 33, and while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat or food, saying, this day is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting and having taken nothing. Wherefore, I pray you to take some meat for this is for your health, and there shall be not an hair of fall from the head of any of you. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when they had broken it, he began to eat. And there, then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. All right, so Paul was a great testimony before them. There's 176, wasn't it, I think, on the ship? A whole bunch of pagans. They don't know the Lord. Just Paul and a couple friends that he might have had knew the Lord. The rest of them weren't. And so Paul, through this whole time, was no doubt witnessing to them and sharing the gospel with them. And now he's a great testimony before them. And he stands up and prays in front of everybody and says, I'm going to eat. You know, God says we're going to get there safely. I'm eating. So they all ate some. And then they throw everything back overboard and hope that they can get to land in time. But then as they head for land, it all crashes onto the shore. And we see there the shipwreck in verse number 39. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust the ship. And when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves into the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoisted up the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore. And falling into a place where the two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable, but the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. Now, stop and think about that. It must have been a massive storm for the ship to get stuck in the sand. And just being stuck in the sand and not able to move and bob around with water, the waves just beat it to pieces. Johnny?
Mentions where two seas meet. Kind of makes you think it's where two big currents intersect. They're probably caught in some sort of rip.
Yeah.
You know, like a very tough spot.
Yeah, so the seas may have come in like this because of the creek coming down out of it may have had a portion, part of that as well. But it was very violent. And it just tore that ship to pieces. And then they got into the water. And the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept him, verse 43, kept him from their purpose of killing him, and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. I mean, that alone is an absolute miracle. I mean, you think about it, a storm wild enough to smash the ship to bits, and yet they all swam to shore.
Including the ones that couldn't swim.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Just floating on boards.
Well, they probably, because it was a miracle, they probably might not even have had a board. It's like, literally couldn't sink.
Well, it says that they had boards, so.
I guess, but it was still a miracle.
So. But it was an amazing thing to think
before
that.
Before you'd have this one wave to push you against like a bunch of rocks, and you'd dash into a pole.
I think we're looking at a ship I know it says cast out the sail and the rudder band, so we're looking at a ship that's entirely based on a rudder and a sail, but no manpower, like the triremes were...
Well, see, the big... I mean, I'm not an expert at this, but from what I've read, a lot of the ships that were oar-powered were more war vessels than the cargo vessels.
Because you couldn't rely on the wind during the battle.
Yeah.
To position yourself.
Yeah, they had to be able to be fast.
That's a lot of people to have on a ship, though, to run a ship.
Well, we don't know how many of them were slaves. I mean, prisoners.
Oh, yeah.
There were prisoners. There was others. I don't know. And maybe there was some oar people too, but nothing's mentioned about the oars. And on a big ship like that. You got to get your oars down close enough to the water to do some good. So a lot of the warships were more sleek and shallower and had the oars out the sides. So, yeah, it's a lot of things to think about and ponder, and nobody knows for positive, but it's a lot of things to keep our minds going there. Then they departed eventually. The first part of 28 is all about their time there in Malta and how Paul healed people and as a result, they were real pleased with Paul's ministry there, and so they gave them a lot of supplies and things that they would need to travel. And there was another ship that came along. Well, maybe it had wintered there, and then when the storm settled, they were able to get on that ship and head off to Rome. And verse number 11 of 28 says, "And after 3 months, we departed in ship of Alexandria, which had wintered in the isle, whose sign was Castor and Pollux, and landed in Syracuse, and we tarried there 3 days, and from thence we fetched a compass and came to Regium, and after 1 day the south wind blew, and we came the next day to Puteoli. Yeah. Anyway, it's a hard name to pronounce unless you're an Italian. Petulia. All right, so they make it up to this place, Petulia, whatever it is. And so they departed. They stopped briefly there. We saw at the one port, and then they get up there. And once they reached Petulia, they then apparently left the ship. And we found brethren and were desired to tarry with them 7 days, and so we went toward Rome. So apparently from there they must have traveled up by land, it sounds like. Toward Rome, and verse 15, when the brethren heard of us, they came to meet us as far as Apiforum and the three taverns, whom when Paul saw, he thanked God and took courage. And when they came to Rome, the centurion delivered the prisoners to the captain of the guard, and Paul was suffered to dwell by himself with the soldier that kept him." All right, so they've...
Amazing that the centurion listened to Paul all the way. He including hanging around with his mates for a week after they made landfall. Mm. A centurion's an important soldier. He's a commander of 100.
Yes, but when you think of all that they've been through, and Paul obviously had some connections with God that he was interested in.
The centurion would have had the authority to command the ship's captain to do whatever he wanted because he's a centurion. But they all listened to Paul, including when to set sail and not to lose heart and to hang around for a week with his friends. I mean, the centurion just sort of tagged along with Paul.
Johnny?
I don't know if the Bible mentions it or not, because I didn't tell the story again, but just from a traditional point of view, a Roman soldiers, if they were suspecting that they would, just historically, they were suspecting that they were going to lose the crew or go aground or shipwreck, traditionally they would just kill all the prisoners because they would actually, they'd face horrific consequences if any of them escaped.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm assuming very likely, because that's historically accurate, that's what would happen.
Well, see, that's what they...
Paul must have talked them into, so don't worry.
Well, yeah, I skipped over that verse number 42. Yeah. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners lest any of them should swim out and escape. And the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose.
Yeah, because that's also historically just a fact. I mean, like, we know that was what they did. The Romans commanded
them to do it. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of things. You know, this is one of my favorite chapters of the book of Acts. It's just because of all the excitement. It's an exciting chapter. There's lots of things in there. But we see that Paul finally makes it to Rome. And it is here that he spends 2 years in Roman prison and was then brought before Caesar. And apparently he was set free for a brief time, but it didn't last very long. And then he was grabbed again, taken back to Rome, and the second time he was executed. So when he was at Rome then, this time, he wrote his prison epistles, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. So he wrote the prison epistles. And then when he was there the second time, somewhere in between there he probably wrote 1 Timothy, but then when he was there the second time he wrote 2 Timothy, and that was his final one when he was in prison waiting for his execution. Okay, so that was at the end. So that brings us to the end of Paul's excursions here.